The OTB Brief. Everything you need to know about sport every morning. Need to get on top of the day's sports news? Well, the OTB Brief is the only sports update you'll need every morning. With all the breaking stories, post-match reaction.
They had one more day to rest. We were really in trouble. Really in trouble to build the team.
And the best bits from off the ball, all in a 10-minute podcast.
Oh, sweaty palms. Of course, you guys know what it's like, but that was nervy.
The OTB Brief, online every morning from 7 a.m. on offtheball.com, the Go Loud app, and everywhere you get your podcasts. The OTB Podcast Network.
Seen anything like that?
I'm a very confident front runner for Kelly for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
Hello there, you're welcome along. So something of a reality check on the PGA Tour this week. Positive tests, withdrawals, very part of the new normal. You are very welcome along to Golf Weekly. We have with us Fionn Davenport on the hottest day of the year, I'm told, over in the UK. Hello, Fionn.
Yeah, 31 degrees somewhere. Close enough here, 27 degrees, I think. Yeah, it's boiling. It's gorgeous.
Very good. Peter Laurie, hello to you.
Hello, Joe.
I have seen you already this week. I was out at Spawa.
You were?
There was not a single bay downstairs. Business is good, Peter Laurie. Business is very good.
Business is good, yeah. But we have to say you weren't getting a lesson off me now, Joe.
No, I've learned my lesson.
You had to go to the opposition.
Yeah. Nathan Murphy, hair gelled to the nines, I would say. Teenage disco levels of
literally.
Hair gel.
I've used more gel in the last 2 weeks than since I was 15. Huh. Didn't work for me when I was 15. I'm not sure it's working now.
Oh, no, it is. It's working. It's working. Are hairdressers open from Monday?
Monday, yes. Okay. I presume I haven't booked in, though, so am I going to have to wait for another month?
Yes.
I see there's a certain hairdresser opening up on at 12:01 on the 29th.
It's a good publicity stunt.
Yes. Yeah.
I presume, will we have to, you don't really book in men's hairdressing. You just turn up and queue.
But I wonder now, are you allowed just turn up anywhere without giving your name in advance?
Probably not, because it would just be absolutely thronged with people sitting right beside each other in the barbershop.
And if you go to Peter Mark, you got to give him an extra 60 quid or whatever it is.
Because your hair is grown.
Yeah. Well, it's your fault. Your hair grew. What do you want?
So, look, let's get right into it. Interesting times. We're in Connecticut now. The PGA Tour does continue. The Travelers Championship continues. And Webb Simpson won very well, which we should talk about at Hilton Head last weekend. But I suppose the big news is suddenly, I was going to use the word a raft. I don't know if we've had a raft of withdrawals. But certainly enough going on to give the PGA Tour pause for thought and for Jay Monahan to fly up to Connecticut and give a press conference. I'm not quite sure why he flew up to do it, given it was all virtual anyway. Maybe he was making a statement. So certainly what we do know is that Ricky Elliott, who's been on the show, has tested positive. Although then there were some reports he had subsequently tested negative, but he certainly did test positive. We have Ken Conboy, Graham McDowell's caddy, testing positive. And Cameron Champ tested positive on the Monday as well. And I was just listening to an interview with Graham McDowell, for instance. This will give you a sense of the confusion. He was on the Golf Channel this morning. So McDowell is driving back to Florida. He doesn't want to fly. So his caddy, Ken Conboy, tested positive. And Graham McDowell was out playing a practice round with Ricky Elliott and Brooks Koepka, obviously. I think Chase Koepka was there as well. And Shane Lowry was in the group as well, Graham McDowell was saying. And McDowell all last week said he wasn't feeling well. He's muscle aches. He feels very, very tired. Doesn't feel himself. He had initially put it down to just being back on tour and traveling again. And, you know, just not quite having his golfing legs, but he knew he wasn't feeling right and he still doesn't feel great. And yet he has continued to test negative. So just, you know, and he said, me and Ken were a close team. We roomed together last week. We spent 6 hours in a car together. He's carrying the virus. So in some way I have to be carrying it too, although he keeps on testing negative and definitely the testing is far from watertight. But all of this has gone on. It's suddenly blown up in the last week, Nathan. I mean, when it's happening, you kind of think, oh, wow, this is really serious. But maybe this will just be a regular thing. Maybe there will be close to half a dozen of these incidents on a given week. I don't know. I mean, we're only in week three of this thing.
Where to start? Where to start with this? Because there's so many different angles. Firstly, you hope that everybody ends up being okay, because I think 3 months ago, if we had heard of people even in their 30s, 40s of getting COVID, you would be concerned about their health initially and long term. And I think we should still be, because we hear so many different stories of people having all sorts of different effects, long lasting effects. So firstly, you hope everybody does come through this just fine. But what has gone on the PGA Tour just seems like absolute insanity. Even what Graeme McDowell is talking about there. I don't care if he's tested negative. If he has all those different symptoms, what the hell is he doing thinking about going to a tournament? Like, this is the pressure we need to start putting on each other. When we go back into an office to work, I'm sure it's the same in Spawell. If people phone you and say, I've got the shakes, I've got the shivers, I'm not feeling great, stay away from me for as long as you possibly can. Go into self-isolation for 2 weeks. Okay, you've tested negative, and you're keep going to do tests until you test positive. But what? You're going to hang around. Like, it seemed bizarre at first with the Nick Watney story, but the more you've heard of the various modes of transport, the places they've been going for dinner, the amount of hanging around that people have been doing with each other, like the sense that there was any sort of a bubble around the PGA Tour has been blown to absolute smithereens over the last while. And
McDowell said the bubble is speculative at best.
So therefore, considering the rate of infection that is growing in certain parts of America, particularly where the PGA Tour has visited, you can only expect there's going to be more and more cases over the coming weeks. So I don't know where this ends, and there does seem to be an acceptance amongst players that they are at risk and they were willing to take that risk, and they're backing that they're young, healthy, fit men that will be able to fight this virus. But how many need to be testing positive before they call the whole thing off? And like, are they changing from what Jay Monahan said, are they changing protocols that dramatically?
Not that dramatically. I think they're going to up testing. I think they're going to make sure that the gym on site is within the bubble and everything has been tested, because players obviously want to go to the gym. They don't want players going outside of the restricted area for their workouts. But I don't think dramatically. And wasn't it interesting even when Justin Thomas last week was talking about South Carolina being a zoo? So, you know, when you're talking about, like, players, I don't think they're advised not to go out and about. But even on the McKellar podcast, there was a journalist on there saying how, like, caddies invited him out for dinner and there was a queue of 75 people. And so, like, it only takes a few to go beyond the bounds of what they're meant to do, who maybe can't afford to bring a chef like Koepka has done to his house. And that's how the virus gets in. So what Justin Thomas said was, I mean, no offense to Hilton Head, but they seem not to take it too seriously. It's an absolute zoo around here. There's people everywhere. The beaches are packed. Every restaurant, from what I've seen when I've been driving by, is absolutely crowded. So I would say it's still a coincidence that there's got to be a lot of stuff going on around here. And then he was talking about Nick Watney. He was saying, unfortunately, it's not on Nick, because I know he's very cautious and he's done everything he can. But I would say a lot of people in this area of Hilton Head just aren't. And so, Fionn, if they're going to those areas, it's really hard if someone's out for dinner the night before at a Hilton Head type environment. And yes, they may get tested potentially the next morning, but they won't test positive potentially for however many hours or days after that.
Yeah, I mean, as Nathan said, like, where do you start unpacking this? It's Jordan Spieth said, look, it's very difficult. Carolinas are open. That's the way it is. And so it's a reflection of what's going on in broader society, where you have a substantial minority, I think, still, but still a substantial number of people in the US who are ambivalent, really, about the true effects of coronavirus. They're reluctant to adopt the obvious measures like wearing a face mask, which they see as an infraction on their civil liberties. You know, if they were operating a bubble, like, for example, the list of hotels wouldn't be just recommended. They would be, these are the only places you can stay. But it kind of speaks to the issues that the PGA have, where the PGA as an organization is a weird one, where it depends on the cooperation of what are effectively self-employed professionals. And, you know, a self, like, tried, I mean, I realize that Tiger has mysteriously not given any indication of when he's going to play again, but like, try telling Tiger this is the only hotel you can stay in, you know? You'll go, yeah, I'm not going to play. Okay, so, and I think that that's a bigger issue. I mean, I don't know if you saw, did you see Ewan Murray in the Guardian, where he was at Hilton Head, and he was saying, he was talking en route to the locker room without so much as raising an eyelid. Dustin Johnson, the former number one, spat directly into decorative hedging between myself, a player manager of my acquaintance, and the footpath. As we shook heads, Johnson continued on his merry way. Until Friday, Johnson's disgusting propensity to yak all over courses, including greens, in the middle of a pandemic, was arguably the biggest negative associated with the PGA Tour's resumption. So, like, even something like that, and I realize Dustin Johnson isn't the only spitter, you know. I was watching Adam Hadwin play, and there is just a positive note. Adam Hadwin's now one of my favorite players. But, you know, he was on camera and he, like, walked away from taking a two-stroke penalty yak on the course. And it's this sense that you get the sense that a lot of players just haven't quite internalized these substantive changes they need to make in order to keep possibility of infection at bay. And as I said, you know, when you consider, like, you had in America just there yesterday, 37,000 new infections, four states, including Florida and Texas, that reported their highest single day totals. And this is after the governor of Florida, like a few weeks ago, was like aggressively accusing the media of making the, like, turning coronavirus into something way bigger than it is. And we have the lowest rates ever. And you guys are just liars. And it's all fake news. And, you know, so in that atmosphere, are you surprised that, you know, that five people or whatever it is, four people have tested negative or tested positive? Absolutely not.
Mm. Peter?
The governor came out with having to wear face masks now, didn't he, in Florida, going against Donald Trump?
Yes. Well, only because, I mean, Florida, as we know, is like, Florida has like a huge number of retirees, like massive, they're like, you know, big number of people in like that target, in that target age group for who are the most vulnerable. Like, and it's, I mean, it's genuinely, it's obscene. We had Connor on, Connor Moore on from Florida, and we kind of alluded to it. Is that like, oh, the governor, they have like a kind of a slightly weird kind of hands-off approach to the threat of coronavirus. But like, you know, I mean, as Rory McIlroy said, is like, look, 200,000 people are going to die of this before the end of the year. Like, that's a shocking number. And he goes, so, you know, the notion that people are going to test positive surely isn't beyond the realm of reason. And he's absolutely right.
Peter, I got the impression Jay Monahan, the PGA Tour commissioner, in his press conference last night, was taking the opportunity to remind players not to be blasé about this. I think their general demeanour on course, the way they're... I don't even think they're meant to be handing clubs to caddies the way they are. They're definitely always standing far too close together. Dustin Johnson is spitting on the course. I've seen pictures, I've seen the video footage of him spitting on the course. They're standing in very close proximity on the range. They're operating, I would think, on the assumption that, well, we've all got through the testing bubble and we're now inside the bubble, and now that we're inside it, all bets are off, and we're kind, you know, odds are we're okay. Odds are we're probably okay because we've got through the initial bubble. And I think Jay Monahan last night was saying just getting through the testing bubble is now not enough. Because even Nick Watney, I hadn't realized, maybe we didn't touch on this last week, Nick Watney initially tested negative and still felt dreadful and asked for a second test, and then that one came back positive. But to my eye, Peter, that's how the players are, sorry, I don't want to tarnish all of them, that's how quite a lot of the players are understandably behaving in this environment.
Leave the tarnishing to me, Joe. I'm normally quite good at that. you hang on to those lawyers. I've got a few of my own. Look, as I've said before, you either have to play golf, you're either incredibly clever or incredibly stupid. And unfortunately, these guys have fitted into a sort of comfort zone where they're getting tested on a daily basis or a weekly basis, and they think, hey, I'm fine, I'm grand. But unfortunately, this bubble that was set up has not been set up probably the way it was envisioned initially, where players and caddies would be staying in the similar places, not mixing with external than the PGA, you know, guys and girls, and that just doesn't happen. We saw with Graham McDowell, he flew back privately. His plane was too full to bring his caddy, so Ken Conboy got a commercial flight back, and hence thinks he picked it up somewhere there. So really, they really need to have a look at it again, because this could turn, as they even called it themselves, a zoo very shortly, and there could be no golf, because they're going to have to stop it again with so many infections. And I read an article there the other day, if Tiger or McIlroy had, tested positive for the coronavirus, would the tournament be called off? And there we have Brooks Koepka, testing or worried about his caddies being tested positive. His brother qualified, did a great Monday qualifying. I think his first of nearly in over a year, I think it's the first time he's Monday qualified, and now can't play because one of his team have tested positive for the coronavirus. So
you get the feeling as well that the PGA, and perhaps, to be scathing on the PGA is a little unfair, given that we are in unprecedented territory. And I have to assume that they acted on good faith and that they did as much reasonable prep as they thought they needed to do. But even like when Nick Watney withdrew, and so he played the first couple of days with Vaughn Taylor and Luke List. So he withdraws. They don't tell Luke List or Vaughn Taylor until the 9th on the Friday of the reason for Watney's withdrawal. And it's like even just that simple protocol.
Yeah.
It just makes no sense. And so you're telling two players mid-round that you've just spent the last day with in close proximity to or whatever. And it's like, oh yeah, he's withdrawn because he tested positive for the coronavirus. So it seems that they're caught a little hot-footed in the sense of like, they need to have better protocols in place for dealing with positive tests. And
that does seem to be where this falls down. That's where it is all so bizarre, that they seem to put their entire trust in daily testing of the players, but having not thought about, well, what comes next?
Yeah.
What happens? And also, and it has, thinking about this quite a bit over the last few days, almost thinking, have I been overreacting for the last 3 months in the way that I've thought about this virus? Have I been far too fearful of the impact it could have on me or other people and how I could spread it to other people? As to like the incubation period. So what we're seeing now doesn't seem to have actually materialized at Hilton Head. It was at the Charles Schwab. And what we may see next week, maybe what happened at the zoo at Hilton Head, which is again from week one of this of 14 days self-isolation. And that's where the worry would be as to how quickly this develops through the tour. But I would almost look at it, and again, probably naively, and even going back to being surprised that the likes of McIlroy all returned so quickly, that, right, we're talking about them in sole traders and that the PGA Tour have no control. I would have thought that the players, particularly those senior players like Justin Rose or Justin Thomas, would be going to the PGA Tour saying, we're not coming back unless you do absolutely everything right. So I want number 150 in the world staying in the same hotel. I want his caddy staying in the same hotel. I don't want him going out enjoying Hilton Head and inviting journalists for dinner. And I'm not playing. I'm not turning up unless you can guarantee me everybody is doing the right thing. Not for me, who again will back that I'm a 30-year-old fit man who will come through this. But at some stage, I want to go home to my family and my wife's family. And I don't want to give it to them. But that doesn't seem to have come under consideration at all. And I just can't understand how the players have let that happen.
I have huge sympathy for the PGA Tour. So for instance, and I totally take your point. So say to develop that, what happens, say you're Jay Monahan, and he looked a bit ashen-faced last night because I think he realizes if the appearance of losing control happens here at any point soon in the next week or two, they're going to have to shut the tour down again. And then it's a very, very long conversation before you can restart it. You know, when they brought this back, this wasn't for a 6-week run. This was, we're back and we're operating now indefinitely. So say for instance, a bunch of guys by necessity missed the cut on the Friday and they're due to play again the following week. So if they all go home and spread to their various corners and the US is treating this thing the way it appears they are, and some of the players, even if they're trying to be responsible, their partners or their friends or their family are out at Hilton Head or zoos elsewhere, bring it back into the home And then, you know, player in the 150 turns up at the next event on the Monday. He's been hanging out at the weekend with his family at home. Test negative, but he's contagious in some way, because I don't know what's going on with the testing here based on some of these specific examples. Like, it's weird that Graham McDowell is not feeling well and his caddy has it and he keeps testing negative. Maybe he doesn't have it and maybe he is just lacking fitness, whatever. But if you're the PGA Tour, how do you turn around to Justin Rose and guard against that? How do you guard against Nathan Murphy misses the cut, goes home, behaves okay-ish, family members are out in the community, and you bring it on tour, but you test negative Monday? If the testing isn't that watertight and immediate and there's incubation periods, like, if I'm Jay Monahan in my office, I'm like, well, like, there's 60 Nathan Murphys rocking up to the tournament on Monday. If the testing isn't going to give me an immediate answer, I don't know, like, what do I do here? And then suddenly, as you said, 2-3 weeks down the line, this thing could... Imagine the embarrassment if you're at the PGA Tour and Jay Monahan and, like, 30 players and 25 caddies test positive in a week or two.
Mm. Well, I mean, like, the PGA, after the Nick Watney test, they made a big, big deal about advertising that they did 11 tests of 11 different individuals who were around Nick Watney at the tournament. And then said, oh, but they all came back negative, when we know that the incubation period is a minimum of 2 weeks. And it's just like, it's just nonsense. But Joe, you are absolutely correct. When you consider, like, 150 players, 150 caddies, that's 300 separate bubbles that are expected to come together and walk through some kind of super reliable filtering system that's going to eliminate whatever they have absorbed outside of that bubble. It's just not practical. So I wonder if, like in so many things, and particularly we Europeans, we have a very different perception of coronavirus to a lot of Americans who have a very, look, you know, as we die. Old people die, you know, and that's, yeah, absolutely. So a kind of a, it's more a PR thing rather than an absolute health thing.
And look, there is one solution. It came to me as you were speaking there, and I kind of had a chance to catch myself. The solution to the dilemma I've just outlined, and it is a major dilemma though, is that everybody who arrives has to genuinely behave as if they have it. You know, remember that advice when this all started, act as if you have it. And actually, like, the golfers and the caddies could behave as if they have it and they could conduct the tournament reasonably well. The problem is, over the last 2 weeks, they haven't, like, they've been behaving as if they don't have it.
And that's exactly right.
That's maybe the coin that needs to flip.
The constant fist pumping.
Like, yeah. Why are they fist pumping?
I even saw a picture of it, and I don't know when it's from, and here, every player is doing it. So, but McIlroy is always the center of attention. He's fist pumping Jay Monahan. I'm like, why are you fist pumping Jay Monahan? Yeah. There's literally no need for you to fist pump Jay Monahan. Just stay the hell away from him. Stay 2 meters away from him and stay 2 meters away from everybody. And here, it is difficult, and we could compare it to what the European Tour is going to do, and it's a different scenario because you are dealing, as you mentioned, with absolute superstars, and how viable is it for the PGA Tour to come back if they were to put these incredibly strict measures in place? Would you have the top 10 in the world saying, well, actually, we're not going to play for 6 months? And then you have all sorts of different issues for the PGA Tour. But maybe that's still better than what they're going to end up with, maybe having to pull the PGA Tour a month back. And as you say, when do you return? But in hindsight, I do wonder, could they have done things a whole lot differently, such as saying, you know what we're going to do? We're just going to stay in Florida or somewhere, and we're going to play 4 tournaments in this small little area. And if you want to be involved, you've got to come in on this day, and you can't really leave till this day. And we're sorry if this is incredibly strict, but this is the only way we can get golf back, and it's the only way you can satisfy your sponsors and we can satisfy our sponsors, and that's it. Which is, it seems from the outside, what the European Tour are going to do, because I got an email last week about media accreditation for any of this UK circuit, and it was pretty clear and in what you could and couldn't do, and it doesn't sound like it's going to be a particularly enjoyable experience for any of the journalists who are going to be there. You have to stay in one of the official hotels. You cannot leave that hotel. You will at all times basically be in that hotel or at the golf course, nowhere else. And you go from one to the other. You can't share a car with anybody. I'm not even sure if there's an official media center at the course where people will be congregating together. There's obviously not going to be any side of fairway access anyways, because there's going to be no spectators there. But you have to stay away from the players at all time. And when you're in this bubble, you're in this bubble. Again, maybe people somehow find a way of breaking it. But it does seem as though, and it's an easier thing to do because they've decided we're going to stay in England for this 6 week period. But I just can't understand how the PGA Tour haven't thought a bit more. Maybe we're underestimating, and maybe they underestimated how this was going to spread. Maybe they, like a lot of people, looked at the American figures and looked at New York and the declining numbers and didn't realize that actually, just because it hasn't been high in Florida so far, doesn't mean it's not going to escalate quite quickly, or South Carolina, or wherever else they go.
Yeah. Well, we'll watch this week. It'll be interesting to see if the on-course behavior is different. Sorry, Peter. Yeah, we'll make a final point or two in this, then I'm going to ask you about Webb Simpson, yeah?
Well, sorry, I was just going to say it's going to have serious ramifications for Ryder Cup.
There won't be a Ryder Cup.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Well, will there be, again, and I've seen so many different angles to, say, the PGA Championship in San Francisco. So firstly, the European players who haven't made the trip so far, are they, looking at all this, going to feel safe making the trip? And also, are players who, if they test positive and have been in an environment where they've been positive tests, are they going to play now for the few weeks before the PGA Championship? Are they thinking, you know what, I'm just going to go home, sit in my house, and make sure I don't get caught out some way in all this, and I can turn up in the peak of my health and not have to be somehow isolated for 2 weeks? So already, I think they're probably going to face any amount of issues. But you're right, Joe, like the basics of what we see on television. Again, I can't understand how some of the volunteers who are out there, who are clearly in their 60s and 70s, are like, there's nobody else at the course. There's no reason for anybody to be standing on top of each other at a golf course at the moment.
It also is worth bearing in mind that in just over 2.5 weeks' time, the memorial is going to take place. It's going to have spectators. It's going to have a pro-am on the Wednesday. And there's no indication that that it's given the PGA pause for concern. They're going to let people. And I realize that they're going to have like some very strict governance. Like, I think all spectators have to wear masks. But yeah, I mean, they're still going ahead full throttle with their plan.
Yeah, they're going to let 8,000 fans in. I would presume Tiger might be thinking about Memorial. He often plays there, doesn't he? So, like, what if all 8,000 want to go watch Tiger? I suspect they might, you know.
Yeah. I mean, they're not going to be watching number 150 in the world, that's for sure. You know, hey, Tiger's on the 8th. No, I'm staying here.
On the fist bumping thing, like, I don't know. Maybe just my hands touch just in general, you know, rub together all the time in conversation. So if it's on my palms and I've rubbed there and then I go and fist bump you, I mean, fist bumping just should not be happening. I would, because they're doing it as if it's say, well, maybe they're doing virtual ones. There's the elbow tap as well, but you get pretty, like, would you come up and elbow tap me if you knew I had corona?
No.
So I think that's how they should be behaving.
But I was watching the Liverpool Crystal Palace match last night, and I realized football is a slightly different kind of bubble. But like, where the players are hugging, they're giving each other. It's a variation of contact as well as in-game contact. And yet, then you hear that all the Crystal Palace players are going back from Liverpool to London in separate people carriers, a fleet of 20 cars. Yeah. And I'm like, that sounds really reasonable, but given that they've just spent the last 90 minutes kind of virtually licking each other on the pitch, like, I don't understand. The whole thing seems so kind of haphazard to me.
Football so far has done okay on the positive test front, haven't they? Like, even Bundesliga, Nathan, I think, has been pretty good.
Yeah, from the first few weeks where there was five or six maybe in one team, there's been very little talk. But I think the last round of Premier League testing, they had won. And again, maybe it shows, which we've heard, there's been any amount of statistics and bits of research done that how, even in a football match, how often is there a close contact? And maybe the fist pumps aren't an issue. Maybe it is what happens when there's lightning and there's a break. And as you say, going on a commercial flight, maybe it's hard to imagine they've all picked it up separately, but it is if you were to follow every single protocol, aside from the few moments you're on the course,
and
even then, you're 99% going to be okay. But the second you start doing whatever the hell you want, that's where the problem starts.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the thing. I think the difference is, you think your average Premier League footballer isn't milling around with the general public as much as a golfer who's going into a local restaurant to get a bite to eat or taking a commercial flight.
Or the caddies, like the cat, you know. I don't know. Next 10 days are massive for the PGA Tour. Like, I really thought that was Jay Monahan. Again, as I said earlier, he looked a bit ashen-faced. I think he knows if they lose the PR battle, then they have to shut down. And then how quickly do you start the conversation about starting up again? So I don't know.
What you'd love to find out is on who's on Sergio's list.
Oh yeah, that's one of the more. Did he mean it that way? Well, that was incredible.
You can. Yeah. We Shane Ryan on the show on Monday night, and he was at Hilton Head. I don't think he heard it live, but he said if you want to give him the benefit of the doubt, what he meant was that Nick Watney was one of the players who was taking this very seriously and was doing the right thing, where there were other players who he knew weren't taking it seriously. So maybe because of that, they deserved it more. Not a more, what we might think with Sergio.
That's still just as bad.
Here's my, well, it's not, it's more a, listen, some people, if they're out partying, if they're like Novak Djokovic, top off in the nightclub, well, maybe you're asking for trouble.
That was
Novak's, I mean, Djokovic.
That was just stunning. The tops off in the nightclub. Oh my god!
But that's if anybody needs an example of what that Greek term hubris means, that's it. Like Novak, you twat, absolute fool.
Peter Lawrie, Webb Simpson, who by the way has pulled out this week because a family member has tested positive, and he has described his actions as exercising an abundance of caution. So
it's his daughter who has it. So
is it really?
It's not an abundance of caution. Oh. So this was used a few times yesterday.
That's a minimum of caution.
Like, I would have thought that's a basic if somebody
I thought it was his great family, aunt.
This is again the sort of playing down of
his wife.
Somebody I once met ran into somebody who once had it. Like, that's an abundance of caution.
Oh.
I would have thought anybody who has a direct family member who tests positive, again, automatic withdrawal.
Yeah, well, yeah, sorry, yeah. I didn't realize it was his daughter. So, well, look, he won at Hilton Head. Bogey-free 64, 5 birdies in the final 7 holes, and he won the tournament. It was a record 22 under. There was a 6-way tie for the lead at one stage. If you didn't watch this, it's a bit like Colonial. This was really good again. Webb Simpson, by the way, Peter, is up to 5th in the world. This is his 7th PGA Tour win. He is the US Open champion, obviously, in 2012. Players' Championship winner not so long ago. I think it was me. I scoffed at poor Webb having to play with Big Bomb and Bryson last week. I thought poor Webb Simpson.
Poor Webb Simpson.
If ever there's an underrated player, top 5 in the world, 7 PGA Tour wins, major champion, I think Webb Simpson's pushing hard for the winning candidate.
And he played so well last week. And when the chips were down, he pulled himself out of that sort of a gang of players on a certain number. Like, we were all thinking at the start of the day when 19 was the total, they all thought maybe if he got to 20 he'd have a chance, but Nick Watney just put the accelerator down the last couple of holes. But he really is, he's very good.
Webb Simpson did. Nick Watney was miles away.
Sorry. Too many names.
How do you rate Webb Simpson's game, by the way, generally? Because the swing doesn't look all that aesthetically nice. I know for a while he wasn't talked about as a good chipper. I don't know, he's clearing that up. And then the putting thing, obviously, is very serious with the long putter and then the ban and then whatever he's doing now.
He really struggled with the long putter. You're right there. And he seems to be getting it back now. You know, a bit of confidence. Putting is all confidence. And he has the shorter one now. But his swing, not something that you would teach to the mainstream, a bit like yourself, you know, going to the driving range. He's not picture perfect, but he certainly gets the job done.
What's funny about his swing?
He's got a couple of moves that you certainly wouldn't teach, you know, and there's certainly moves that you would say that a lot could go wrong with. But
such as
his hand-eye coordination is exceptionally good.
Yeah. So what's the move that you wouldn't teach, or what's the thing that's not?
That kind of his follow through and as he goes through the ball, he's very much, he likes to hook it.
Yeah.
And you know, in this day and age, guys don't move the ball as much as he does in the air.
Did you miss the fans, Nathan?
No, I haven't missed the fans at any stage.
No.
It's a good story, Simpson, because he's not your Bryson DeChambeau. He has a different way of playing the game. And it's brilliant the way he's turned around, because after winning the US Open, he was very much the man for a couple of years, playing Ryder Cup and then spelling the doldrums. And again, just shows that in golf, you can always come back. I just always have my head with Webb Simpson, Glen Eagles, first morning of the Ryder Cup, playing alongside Bubba Watson. Oh. And he's visibly shaking and hits one of stuff of nightmares. And Bubba turns around. Bubba turns around to Justin Rose and goes, "Don't you laugh at him?"
I totally forgot about that. Did he top it or he skied it?
He had like a 100-yard drive, wasn't it?
I just can't remember if it just went up in the air or if he topped it. I think he might have just skied it.
No, I thought he topped it. Did he not?
Maybe he topped it. Yeah,
kind of hit a heely top. Went along the ground.
Yeah,
it was. So. I must say, I'm with you, Joe. I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. I was talking to my friend Seamus, who used to spend time out there and has played the course many, many times. And he described it to me as a shorter Valderrama. So it's a real plotter's course. Like, it's not enough to hit fairways. You have to hit the right side of the fairway. And it's all about navigation. Now, obviously, you have like bombers who just go over corners. You had like, did you see Koepka on the ninth, the 331-yard drive? Like, you know, the bunker at the front, he just was like, yeah, whatever. And he put it to 3 feet for eagle. But everyone else, like, is going much shorter and then approaching in. It's a real plotter's course. And, but I have to say, like, I've seen him a bit, but Abraham Anser, oh my God, what a round of golf. It was a shame he came up, you know, with that, what did he, 40 yards to force it at the end, to force a playoff. But it was, it was just beautiful. It was gorgeous golf. Oh, it was exciting. I was disappointed, obviously, Spieth. But McIlroy again, just, you know. But
That just didn't suit him. Like, he really said as much. He couldn't pick lines off the...
Exactly.
Off the tied 41st. He said, in fairness, there's other courses on tour that will fit my game better. He's played here twice, Connecticut, where they are this week for the Travelers. He's gone in as the favorite. Like, it's still such a good field, is the thing. If I get it up here. It's
top
still,
five in the world again for a straight week.
Like, we are kind of spoiled here. This is not the Travelers Championship that we've come to know and love over the years. So DeChambeau is
not now that Koepka's pulled out.
Yeah.
DeChambeau's the favourites, by the way. McIlroy's second favourite. Justin Thomas there again. John Rahm, Patrick Cantlay, Dustin Johnson is there again. Xander Schauffele, Justin Rose, Bubba Watson. On it goes. So the field is really good again. Patrick Reed, etc. So we'll see how it goes this week. Andy Sullivan was talking to the BBC, Peter, just on this world rankings thing. I don't know if you have a view on this. So Andy Sullivan has dropped 7 places over the last 2 weeks because obviously he's not playing golf and the PGA Tour is. He says, they're getting points. We're just sitting down and watching them and they're just taking our points, basically. I'd be lying if I said I wasn't absolutely fuming. I think it's an absolute joke. It's completely unfair. It's a world ranking system. It's not a US Tour system. It's ridiculous.
The problem with the world rankings, it's run by the US in general. And like, the US control golf, let's be honest. So if they're playing, the world rankings have to keep going. And there's no reason why Andy Sullivan can't go to the States. However, he's chosen not to. I agree with him that sitting at home, you're losing points. As McIlroy says, there's no reason why guys can't get on a plane and come over here. It's a bit easy for Rory to say that because he lives there now. I'd have to think, though, if I was in Andy Sullivan's shoes, I would say it's completely unfair and world ranking points should not have started until all the tours are back playing again. And really, the only tour that's back playing currently is in America. There's no other tour going.
Maybe even at a reduced level of world ranking points reflect that if over this week period, 6 week period, somebody like Webb Simpson goes on a run, that you do see some improvement in your world ranking. There, if you were still playing and you had the chance to go to America right now, would you go?
I'd be controlled by the boss, and the boss would probably say no. But if I was a young man and had no family, yes, I'd go.
But would it be expensive in terms of, you know, if you had to go, you had to quarantine for 2 weeks, you have to establish a base. Would finance be a consideration for, I mean, I don't know how wealthy Andy Sullivan is. I'm sure Tommy Fleetwood doesn't have that problem. But
no, Andy did well there a couple of years ago. He, you know, nearly got on. He was close enough to a Ryder Cup team, was he not? So, he should have plenty in reserve. However, if I was just starting out, yes, the financial element would be there. And you do have to, as you say, quarantine for 2 weeks. I was talking to Ronald Flood there the other day. Himself and Porrick have to go over there, quarantine, stay in the one place. I think they can go to a golf course and stay on the complex and play for 2 weeks before they can actually play. But they have to get a letter from the White House to get in into the country, and then trying to get a flight over there is going to be difficult enough.
Are they going?
Yes.
I'm sure Paul are going to have a problem getting a letter from the White House.
No.
Or from the, you know, I'm sure that's fine. But I'm sure for other players who are
Looks like he's going to be there for probably maybe 8 to 10 weeks. It's a lot of time to spend in one place, you know, not being able to kind of leave. Because if he leaves, he has to do quarantine here and then quarantine back when he goes back again.
Hmm.
The man's got a lot of practice in, so I was going to say.
Never been sharper. He's probably going to win. Yeah.
Well, the Twitter might have finished. I believe he's really enjoying that. So, and he's brilliant at it. So hopefully you continue that on that in America.
Well, he's just got the 35,000 videos up now. So, you know.
Nathan, I've just realized, by the way, you're going to be the person at the office who'll be throwing daggers if anyone comes in feeling in any way dodgy. And I'm right behind you. I support this. I support this too.
Like, again, why would you be coming in if you feel anyways dodgy?
Some kind of moral duty. I could work.
Lads, what I want to know is how are they going to work things in that small little area that you have and off the ball?
There's all sorts of changes. If you walk into the office, it looks totally different now. There's all sorts of perspex glass up. There's only a third of the amount of people allowed in the office at the one time.
Right.
But I won't name names, but in the week before all this started, we had a couple of people in the office who had, I would say one of them certainly had COVID, had an extremely bad cough, and point blank refused to accept. Now, it was a time when nobody knew what it was, really. Mm. But I would imagine everybody would feel that now, that sort of attitude, like myself and Joe used to sit beside each other all day, every day. Mm. If you're sitting there going, feel I might be coming down with something, is anyone in the office going to go, Dosser? No, yeah. Everyone's going to get the hell out of here. Mm. Come back in 2 weeks.
Yeah, I heard someone saying, actually, we should have really had that attitude to the flu all these years. You know, actually, like this culture of coming in when you're sick is a terrible idea because you are just spreading the flu around. And even just we don't wash our hands as much. They're hopeful that the flu won't spread as much for those reasons in future, that we'll all be washing our hands and maybe be more inclined not to come in. But I don't know. Once there's a vaccine, we'll get back to normal pretty quickly.
In 3 years' time.
Yeah. So any final thoughts? I didn't see much of Rory. I mean, when we were recording this time last week, he was already 3 or 4 over. He just, it's like any level. Once you start off around 3, 4 over and you know you're out of the tournament, it's and no fans, it's probably very hard to muster up any kind of adrenaline that you need.
As you said yourself, there was no real, there's no concern for Rory.
No.
Insofar as that this is not a course that suits him. It didn't suit his eye. It's a tough course to play for a guy like him. So he walks away going, look, I'm glad I showed up. I did, you know, these are my obligations to the PGA as one of the highest profile players in golf.
Mm.
Let's move on.
Can I say something on that one? I don't believe that at all.
You don't?
No, okay. I don't believe in, there is such thing as, yes, I agree with horses for courses. However, you're world number one. I remember playing the London Club many years ago. It was one of the longest golf courses we'd ever played. It was actually Shane Lowry's first time to be a professional, was the London Club. And I was speaking with Christian Savard in the locker room afterwards. And Christian was probably one of the shortest hitters on tour. Okay, he was straight. He said to me, I have no chance in this tournament. Absolutely none, because of the way he played. And I said, Christian, don't be silly. I said, you can hit it on the fairway. You can hit rescue everywhere and, you know, you still give yourself a bit of a chance. Lucky enough, he turned out, he won the tournament, right? He won the tournament with a driver, a rescue and a putter. That's all he pretty much used. I believe if you're world number one, you can play any golf course, anywhere, anytime. Like every other world number one, like does a racetrack not suit you know, the world number one in athletics or in tennis or whatever. Yes, there's grass, there's clay, but you're still the world number one.
Yeah, but you're absolutely right. But it's not. It's worth remembering that he shot a 65 on the Friday, followed by a 66 on the Saturday. He was 10 under on the Sunday. It's not as if he blew up. He shot a disappointing 70 on the Sunday. So yep. Absolutely, he didn't go low like your answers or your Simpsons, etc. But yep. You know, it's not as if it was a. It's not. It wasn't. I thought more. It was more troubling at the Charles Schwab. Like the Sunday performance seemed more troubling.
Well, okay, maybe my point is stop making excuses.
Well, I guess.
But I get to maybe support Peter, and though I don't thoroughly agree with you, the fact that he shot so well on Friday and Saturday, just to back you up for once, because listen, we all pile in here, Peter. We all pile in. But, like, the fact that he did shoot score low on Friday and Saturday shows that actually maybe the course wasn't that big an issue.
Yeah,
yeah,
true.
Yeah.
I guess it's different. Imagine, like, every week he's asked for, why didn't you win this week? You know, it's not like he runs over to the media and say, I've got an excuse. It's like he gets asked and he probably just has to go, why didn't I win? Maybe this, maybe that. You know, you got to throw out a reason. You wouldn't have been, so Peter, when you finished a round on a Sunday, would you have had to do media? Like, would you have had someone every Sunday going, what happened there?
No. Sure, I was running to catch a flight to get home.
Yeah. So that is a big obligation. You know, imagine me sticking my nose into your game every week. It wouldn't have taken long now for a sarky comment or two to come out of you. By long, I mean about 8 seconds.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I think it's hard.
Okay, maybe I'm not slagging Rory. I'm just making the point that I don't believe in the if you're that good, which he is. And trust me, I am his number one fan of his golf game.
Sure.
Okay? And I hope Sean is listening to this, his manager. I have nothing against Rory or, you know, his entourage. What I am saying is that if you're number one, prove it to me. Prove that you're number one.
But didn't he?
I think that happens by
being. I think he has.
You know, I think if you get to number one, that's you don't just get number one and work backwards. I think it goes the other way.
Yeah, I think they just didn't give him the number one because they liked him. But like, I mean, surely the answer that is because the winning percentage of a professional golfer is under 10%. That's why I didn't win this week. You know.
Yeah. Correct. Come here, Shane Lowry. Two things with Shane at the moment. He a bit like McDowell, although maybe McDowell has more of an excuse than we realise. Shane Lowry's missed two cuts on the bounce, and he keeps getting rotten draws. This is the kind of thing you wouldn't notice until people, mainly Irish journalists, highlighted it. Like he's getting rubbish in terms of the people he's playing with, some inexperienced people, which maybe doesn't help, and then not the greatest of times. Maybe
he got a better draw this week.
Did he? Yeah, as open champion.
Paul Casey and Patrick Cantlay. But okay. I noticed it the first week back because I knew he was intending to play, and I went looking for him. And I was like, yeah, there's no sign of him. Maybe decided going to wait another week and looked again. And then eventually you find him at 20 past seven with two guys you've barely even heard of. But considering he is the last major champion, nobody's won one since.
Yeah.
So I believe his management company went and spoke to the tour. I would have thought they would be speaking probably better off to the TV guys, because the TV sets the tour sets the draw, but the draw has to be run by the TV first of all, before it's announced. Yeah. And the TV then will have a right to move it around a little bit.
And could that affect him in any real way?
I think it more affects your ego rather than anything else.
Right, yeah.
About different times you're playing. But they did that to Montgomery. Look how they treated Montgomery when he was over there. Like he was close to world number one. He was European number one by a long streak. And he was out first or last every week.
What, really?
Yeah. Well, his draw over in America was horrendous for years.
Just because they didn't like the cut of his jib and his Ryder Cup business.
Yeah.
Wow.
Very much so.
With Larry, I suspect it's more of an oversight. The TV people are like, we've got the top however many of the world here.
You just mightn't rate very highly in TV terms.
Yeah, but even still, there's a bit of respect you have to show the last major champion. And I hope it hasn't affected his play. But even from the last time I spoke to him, one of the things he was missing from golf being gone was that he would have gone to the Masters as the last reigning major champion and would have expected to have had a really good draw there. Mm. Likewise, going through all the majors, would have been front and center. He would have expected. So therefore, when you're turning up at these run-of-the-mill events, albeit with really good fields at the moment, you got to think you're going to be there or thereabouts with the feature groups.
Yeah, no, it's true. I guess if I was to don Peter's tough love cap, then the short answer is there's one way to guarantee yourself a good draw for the weekend, you know, and you've got to do it as well. But I guess it's true, though, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, that's a real McGinley comment. If anybody ever comes to Paul McGinley and says, oh, this, that, and the other, he just goes, play better.
Yeah.
Simple as, play better. Don't be annoying me. Play better.
I really wish at the time we had realized 10 years ago the documentary that could have been made following the Irish lads on tour.
Oh, yeah. Tough love. That's what it would have been called.
You want to believe tough love. You couldn't get a word in edgeways. Like, there was no moaning.
And then we wonder why the new generation, with the exception of Shane, have struggled. But they all arrive on tour thinking, I've made it. I'm going to live the dream. And within a week, they're just beaten down and beaten down. You've done nothing. You've done nothing.
Wow. Zero confidence. The Irish don't like confidence in a person.
No.
Not a fan of it. I mean, because I was curious to see, had you heard how Shane is playing? Because we haven't seen him on TV, unfortunately.
No, have no insights, okay. Unfortunately. Okay. I haven't spoken to you.
Well, I'm sure he'll get it going again. I mean, he's a field player. He can be streaky, Shane. But geez, when he's on, as we know, yeah, he can win a tournament in his sleep. So I guess he's just waiting for it to click. And people
Bo's
have done varying degrees of practice.
Huh? He's not. Bo hasn't traveled.
No, his wife is due any day now. Maybe she's had it. He hasn't texted me. Right? I must text him actually today to find out. But number two is due very soon.
Okay, very good. Well, we'll see how this week goes. I think we're about done for this week. Jay Monahan and everybody hoping for good news, no news over the next couple of days, and we'll see how the tournament goes. Do you know much about this course? I know Chaz Reavy won last week, but very different field.
Last year,
it's not as tight, I'm told, so maybe it might suit some of the bigger players. Fellas, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much. Fionn, enjoy the nice weather.
Joe.
Peter Laurie, thank you. Nathan Murphy, thank you.
Cheers, Joe.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.